I told my parents didn't come today, so I told my mother yesterday. She didn't feel well, so I told her that if she's not here, I'm going to be much more risque. So she said she'll listen to the tape, but she won't let my father hear it. I think I'll disappoint you till maybe the end. We'll see. That'll keep you awake now to the end. Don't take this the wrong way. There are lots of words in this week's parsha. And when I say there's lots of words, there's really two episodes which were told in really great depth. Not just in great depth, they're also even in repetition. And, you know, once again, it's not just that a good editor over here could have or would have or should have done something with it or made it smaller. The stories themselves could have been told in a completely different way. Which means it could have said, and Sarah died and was buried in Kiryat Arba. It did not have to tell us any more than that. It could have said, I'm sure those sources are real interesting, but if you want the one from my class, it's that one. If it gets boring, I fully expect you to pick that up and look at those a little. All of those. So when it talks about the wedding or getting married, it just could have said, and Yitzchak married Rivka. I mean, there are lots of marriages which are recorded within Tanakh where it gives us less information than that. I mean, let's be honest, if the woman's name is even mentioned, it's already a major accomplishment. So over here, the chapter that deals with the courtship of Rivka, which is actually a very strange way to describe that situation, is one which takes, I think it's some 67 verses. It's the largest chapter in the book of Bereshit. And again, one really could pose the question, why do we need so many words when the first issue could have been dealt with in one sentence and the second issue could have been dealt with in one sentence? And that would have been the entire thing. So once there is so much repetition, we almost have no choice but to pay attention to the repetition and to pay attention to some of the words which are being used. And everything I'm going to do now, I'm just letting you know, I'm doing this in probably the most superficial fashion. Years ago, I had the opportunity of studying with Rav Breuer, and he spent an entire semester on this one chapter. So, on this one chapter. And I assume someone knew what he was talking about, but I know he was very excited. And it looked like we should have known what he was talking about. I'm really not looking at the entire thing. I mean, if you want for your homework, you can go home, and you can go through chapter 24 again and again and again and analyze the statements and the restatements and the perspective afterwards. There is a lot over there. I'm only looking at one thing. And that is, I want to focus today on the person who's actually nameless, which is always interesting. You have the major, what's the term for this? The protagonist. You have the major protagonist in the story whose name is never given. Okay, I don't know if you've noticed this. The reason sometimes we don't notice it, and this again, we've seen this so many times, this is once again, those of you who grew up learning in yeshiva have a distinct disadvantage over those of you who don't. Because when you grew up, go to yeshiva, then you know right away who this person is. He's Eliezer. How do you know he's Eliezer? That's actually a very good question. How do we know that it's Eliezer? So the easy answer is that Rashi says it. Now the harder question is, now why does Rashi say it? So Rashi is working with something that we can call the theory of conservation of characters, which means that characters that we find will repeat themselves and come again and again and again. We do know on a previous occasion, which we'll look at as we move on, that Avram does in fact have a right-hand man. Eliezer. What was the word term you used for major domo? It sounds like a mafia thing. He's his tanto. For those of you who are culturally challenged, I cannot. Right. Elliot. It's okay. We already see who. Eliezer is more than a butler. Eliezer is somebody who is incredibly dedicated to Avraham. And what I want you to notice, very simple, again, his name is never mentioned in this chapter. Those of you who think his name is mentioned over here, read it again. If you find it, please let me know. In my Chumash, it's not there. Yeah. Good, good. But what's interesting, as I said, is he's not mentioned in one way in this chapter. He's mentioned in various ways in this chapter, and that's where it becomes interesting. And the final analysis, I agree with Dr. Aiken completely. In the final analysis, he is dedicated to Avram 100%. Let's take a look from the beginning. Those of you who do not like the Hebrew, please bring the English to the class. Chapter 24, Perek Kaf Dalet, starting with Pasuk Bet. Vayomer Avram el Avdo. Avram speaks to his Eved. Now, what exactly, that's how he's described. What is an Eved? So an Eved is a servant. So that means he is Avraham's servant. And we don't know that much more about him. We do know one thing about him, so even before we continue the rest of that verse. We do know that this is probably one of the most important missions that Avram has ever sent somebody on. We get the suspicion that had Avram himself perhaps been a little bit younger, maybe Avram would have done this himself. Although, you're about to realize that this Eved is not necessarily himself a spring chicken. It says, Vayomer Avram el Avdo, Zikan Beito. Now, what does Zikan Beito mean? So it doesn't mean that he's necessarily old, and now I'll back off what I said before about our spring chickens. It could be that he is senior servant. There's also another way that elder is used, which hopefully some of you will like. Sometimes it means wisdom. Theoretically, when we get old, we become wise. I'm still waiting. Apparently.
We're waiting for you to get there.
That's right. Vayomer Avram el Avdo, Zakan Beito, Hamushel Bechol Asher Lo. Now that already is interesting. What does that mean? The one who is in charge of everything which is on Avram. It means, again, this is Avram's right-hand man. He's the person who runs Avram's house. He's the one who runs Avram's life in a certain sense, and Avram trusts him. He's either elderly or wise or both. He's somebody whose Avram is trusting on this very important mission. But how is he described? Excellent, excellent. And there, the Av Reich, which is suggested as that you may be young physically, but you're very old and wise in terms of your capabilities. He makes him swear, and let's continue. He tells him now, I don't want my son to marry one of the local girls, which, by the way, is very interesting. Immediately following the last chapter, when we see the negotiations with one of the locals and sees exactly how honest and how decent and straightforward Chet and B'nei Chet, and all of you have to laugh every time it says that Avram bows down to the Am Haaretz, that from our perspective it means something else, but it's the juxtaposition between the two chapters is also telling. After dealing with the Canaanites, he says, please, I don't want to marry into this family. It was bad enough buying property from them.
besides being in charge of everything, he's also a shadchan.
He's also a shadchan. I want you to go back to my hometown, which by the way itself is full of irony. Avram was not the most popular person in his hometown. They actually tried to kill him. And that's something also that, if we have time, we're going to get back to. Vayoma ilav ha'eved. The servant says, now again, it doesn't tell us his name. I'm not going to keep on repeating it, but it describes him as the Eved. What if she doesn't want to come? Avram insists. You're not going to bring Yitzchak out of the country. Avram also pretty much tells him it's going to work out. Let's continue in verse number 9, Pasuk Tet. Vayosam ha'Eved et yodot tachat yerech Avraham Adonav. He makes the vow to his master. Pasuk Yud. The servant takes 10 camels from his masters, the chotuv adonav, and everything from his master. So the relationship is very clear. In Pasuk Yud Bet, you can get a good girl for 10 camels. Don't they?
Is that the going price?
Apparently. Okay. In Pasuk Yud Bet, when he prays to God, Vayomer Hashem, and he says, God, Elokei Adoni Avraham, God of my master Avraham, which means even approaching God, it's through his master, it's through Avraham. So again, yes, this Eved knows exactly who he is, and he is fully aware of this relationship with Avraham. He says, you know, please do this quickly, do this today. Vasei chesed im Adoni Avraham, and have compassion for my master Avram. So it all comes down to Avram. He is continued to be called an Eved all the way through when he meets the girl. Pasuk Yud Zayin says, Vayaratza Eved Lukrota, he sees the girl and goes running out to her and he asks for water. And now something shifts. Her perspective is a completely different perspective. But Tomer, she says, Shete Adoni. She says, sir, please drink. Now here's a man that till now, the only sir in the whole discussion had been Avraham. Now, her perspective is that she sees a man who has 10 camels, he has a great deal of food on the camels, and he also has a great deal of jewelry. I mean, a moving jewelry store on the back of a camel can get to a girl's heart, okay? Vatomer shtei adoni vatamaherva, and she starts the whole thing. Pasuk kaf aleph changes, and it doesn't call him an eved. V'ha'ish mishta'e lo machrish l'dat etzdei chashem d'akorim lo. The man. And by the way, it just as easily at this point could have said the Eved, the man. A man, by the way, is a more impressive term than an Eved. Continues, Pasuk Kaf Bet, when the animals finish drinking, Vayikach Ha'ish, the man then takes the jewelry, Vayikod Ha'ish, Vayishtach Vul Hashem, the man bows down to God, and again, when he turns to God, he says, Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham. Which means even though in this story at this point, he now has become, he's perceived as somebody who's of incredible significance, incredible importance. Again, here's a man with 10 limousines in back of him, filled up with the best possible things imaginable, and he's going to try to convince this young woman to come back and to marry his master's son, but all that's not known at this point. So, as long as he deals with Avraham, he is the servant, and he knows he's the servant. He talks to God, he's the servant. But somehow in the narrative, something shifted over here. And what shifts is his significance. And that's what I want you to see. This shift now continues on. He blesses God, Vayomer Baruch Hashem. By the way, the whenever you find yourself saying Baruch Hashem, as far as I can tell, the people who say Baruch Hashem in the Chumash are not Jewish. just pointing this out. He says Baruch Hashem, and later on Yitro says Baruch Hashem. So, and they say you should say something in the name of someone to bring. That's also very funny. They said if you say something in the name of somebody, that brings redemption. Of course, nobody ever says who said that. So, which is why redemption hasn't come yet. But we should be saying, you know, as Eliezer said, as Yitro said, Baruch Hashem. But he probably only converted according to Rav Drukman. I don't know if the Rav would have accepted it. Vayomer, he says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham. Again, he talks to God, my master Avram. So I'm saying he knows exactly who he is later on at the end of Pasuk Zayin, the same thing. Now, the girl's perspective. But Taratz HaNa'arav, she goes running home and she tells her mother, guess what? You know, some guy just gave me a lot of jewelry, so this is good. And by the way, she's wearing. He gives her a nezem. What's a nezem?
A nose ring.
Yeah, for all of those who you would not let your daughters or granddaughters wear such a thing. So it was good enough for one of your matriarchs. Do not say this to my daughter. We'll say no. That's a misinterpretation. We'll tell them other things they wore in those days also. Okay. She goes and she... Right. In Pasuk... Did I skip a little bit? In Pasuk Kafted, L'rivka ach l'shma Lavan, v'yotz Lavan el ha'ish. Lavan goes running, right, to the man. Pasuk Lamed, v'yikra otet nezem etzmadim, when he sees all the jewelry, and here's what Rivka said, kol diber elai ha'ish, v'yavo ha'ish, which means over here in the whole narrative now he is a man of significance. V'yavo ha'ish habayta, the man comes to the house. And what does he say? Again, now he's suddenly taken very seriously, he's being given a lot of honor. What does he say in Pasuk Lamed Dalet? V'yomer, he introduces himself, who am I? Eved Avraham Anochi. I am a servant of Avraham. Which, by the way, for Eliezer, if we get into his head a little bit, that's the best thing you can possibly be. Doesn't get better than to be an Eved Avraham. To be second in Avraham's house is the greatest job there is in the world. When you think about the tragedy of Lot, who decides to become the chief rabbi of Stone rather than being second in Avraham's house. You have to say, like, what is he thinking? Eliezer says this with pride. I am an Eved Avraham. V'Hashem beirach et Adoni. And God blessed my master. What's the matter? Eved Avraham Anochi. What bothers you with Anochi? It is. Well, that's why I'm saying I think there's great pride in this. I'm an Eved Avraham, Anochi. I think that there really is great pride in him making that statement. But who is he? He knows clearly who he is. I am a servant of Avraham. And at this point, he keeps speaking about his master, Adoni, 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 which goes through the whole next couple of verses. And you see how many times I bolded it. Even if you don't know Hebrew, you'll see all of that. Pasuk Nun Bet, 52. V'yikasher shama Eved Avraham et divrehem. Again, he goes back to Eved Avraham now in the narrative. When he hears what they say, he's Eved Avraham. V'yotzi ha'eved. The servant takes out the jewelry. Then they ask her, is she going to go or not? Pasuk Nun Chet. V'yikrulu Rivka v'yomileh ha'tilchi im ha'ish hazeh. Will you go with this man? Which again, from their perspective, he's a man of great significance. The best verse in this whole chapter is actually Samach Aleph, which takes the two perspectives and throws it into one, chapter verse 61. Vatakam Rivka got up, Vina Roteha, and those who accompanied her, Vatikarvna ala Gamalim, and they rode on the camels, Vatilchana Batel Chena Acharya Ish. They follow the man. V'yikach Eved et Rivka Ve'elech. And the slave, the servant, took Rivka and they went. In the one verse, it has both perspectives. Her perspective, this is this man of great significance. And his perspective, who am I? I am an Eved of Abraham. When does it shift? It shifts from her perspective in the next verse. Samach Dalet, 64. Vatisa Rivka et Eneha. She lifts up her eyes. Vateret Yitzchak. And then she sees Yitzchak. Vatomer Ela Eved. Then she says to the servant, Mi Ha'ish. Who's the man? Which means it's only when seeing Yitzchak when she suddenly realized that now the perspective has changed. Again, there is a lot in this chapter in terms of the narrative. The narrative needs to be paid attention to. As far as I can tell, the most important aspect which shifts is the identity of this individual. It shifts depending on who is talking, whether we're dealing with a servant of Avraham or a man, which sounds like a man of great significance. We see even in one verse where both perspectives are used. Again, I can well imagine Bible critics coming and saying it comes from two different sources, from three different sources, from five different sources. It was all put together. It's confused. The Eved, the man, they didn't know. That's certainly not the case over here. It's dealing with a narrative, which is a complex narrative, which is dealing with different people's perspectives. Right? How do you write about different people's perspectives? Different names are used in relationships depending on the relationship. So over here, again, I actually think it's quite exciting. I know for what some of you are saying, I cannot believe he's been wasting my time on this, but it's really quite exciting seeing within the narrative how this one word changes everything. But if we now have to go all the way and conclude, Eliezer is somebody who apparently is a man who's incredibly respectful, has a great deal, he demands a great amount of respect. When people see him, they see somebody who seems to be somebody with great
pride.
What?
Pride.
Great presence, pride. It's somebody who they see as being somebody of significance. But despite all of that, his own self perspective is, as far as he's concerned, and that perhaps is even within that Anochi, within his own perspective, he has the best job in the world. What's the best job in the world? I'm an Eved of Avraham. To be an Eved of Avraham, it doesn't get better than that. But he sees himself as an Eved. And there's no question about this. Okay, full stop. There is parallel character in Bereshit. And by the way, one of the problems with Bereshit is that we tend not to read it like a book. We read it like a religious book, which is a terrible thing to do. I'm kidding about that. But we also break it up into chapters, and we break it up into parshiot, and we don't look at it enough as a book in terms of characters and character development and parallel characters. There are two very clear parallel characters which exist, which when I say it, you're going to say, well, of course that's the case. The two parallel characters are Hagar and Eliezer. Hagar is the maid of Sarah, or the servant of Sarah, and then Eliezer is the servant of Abraham, which means both of them have right-hand men or women, as the case may be, which means, again, you agree with me? It's such an obvious comparison that you have to make between the two of them. And now we saw this long chapter, how Eliezer sees himself. So the question, of course, then comes up, okay, how does Hagar see herself? Look at source number two. V'sarai eshet Avram lo yoda lo v'la shivcha mitzrit u'shma Hagar. She has a servant named Hagar. Now, you can accuse me of unfairly reading into it, of making the direct parallel, because say Eliezer is the elder or the wise or the most foremost. But over here we're told that, and we're not told about any other servant that Sarah has, she's a servant. The only identifying piece of information here, which is also interesting, is that she's Egyptian. It's the only thing that we're told in terms of biographic information. The only biographic information we're told about Eliezer is he is...
from Damascus.
Not that he's from Damascus. He's Damasek Eliezer, which depends what that means. But that's the only piece of information that we're told about him. The fact that there is a parallel over here, I'm going to show you soon, it's such an incredible way that Chazal identify, but I'm gonna go slow a little bit. That's just to whet your appetite. You say things like that just to keep you guys awake every now and again when I think I'm losing you. But I'm going to show you something which is unbelievable, that Chazal see the parallel between them in a way that if you've never seen this, then you can't even imagine it. Okay, so now I'm not going to do that yet. Let's go back. So what's the relationship? She is a shivcha. Now, when they suffer from... Right, it's infertility, not infidelity. Right, infidelity solves the infertility. Okay, when they suffer from infertility, they decide to solve it in the old-fashioned way, which is probably more exciting than the new-fashioned way. V'tomer Sarai el Avram hinena atzarani Hashem yiledet bana al shivchati. So what does Sarah say to him? I'm going to give you my servant, which, again, most of us don't have servants. Actually, I guess all of us don't have servants. So I was once offered to be chief rabbi, and I don't want to say which, but of a small African country, and I was offered a servant. And for some bizarre reason, we turned it down. We thought at the time, because of education for the children, had we known how bad it was here, we would have taken the job. Anyway, not even a small country. Anyway, the... What Sarah says is, come and have a relationship with my servant. So that itself shows something about the relationship. Vatikach Sarai, Pasuk Gimel, Sarai took Eshet Avram, so it's very important. She's described over here as the wife of Avram, which we already know that she's the wife. So so obviously it's stressing that this is the wife. Et Hagar HaMitzrit Shifchata, the wife of Avram takes her servant, right? Is that strong enough? After 10 years and so on. But titain otala Avram isha, lo leisha. Now that's very confusing. She gives it to Avram, her husband, as a wife. So now what's the relationship? She says, take my servant. And who's the real wife? The real wife is Sarah. But Sarah gives her to Avram as a wife. So now which one is it? Is it now is she a wife or is now she is a servant? Vayavo al Hagar, he had relations with Hagar, Vatar Viterikyarata, Vatekal Virta Beinaha. When she gets pregnant, what's the relationship described over here? Gvirta. What does Gvirta mean? The mister, which means the one in charge. So the relationship seems to be, despite that unfortunate turn of phrase, as a wife, she is still supposed to be Sarah's second, but now by virtue of her getting pregnant, she feels that maybe she should not be second anymore. And in fact, that's the Midrash over here goes out of the way to say that she tries to use this as a sign from God that she is the one who's chosen. She's the one who's supposed to be the woman of the house now, because obviously God has chosen her. And then in the words of the Midrash, she goes around and she tells people, Sarah is not what she claims to be. She claims to be a holy woman, but the reality is that she's not. It's just the look on the outside. But in reality, she's not really all that impressive. Which means, at least according to the Midrash, what we find Hagar doing, and by the way, I don't have to just go to the Midrash. It's the verse. The verse just now said it. Right. That she starts to take Sarah in a much... But tikal, what does tikal mean? The word tikal means light. Right. She does not take her as seriously anymore. So if I pause here for one moment, and I have my comparison between Eved Avraham, who is proudly the Eved Avraham, versus, I mean, by the way, you can imagine some people in his position, sure, it's my camel. You know, it's my late, technically Avram signed on the lease, but you know, no, this is my camel. But no, I am Eved Avraham. Everything I'm doing, I am the servant of Avraham. And over here, we find with Hagar, and there is this confusion regarding the relationship between Hagar and Sarah on the one hand, and confusion the relationship between Hagar and Avraham on the other hand. And let's be honest, having a sexual relationship with your servant does complicate relationships. And the moral of the story is, if your wife tells you to sleep with someone, the answer is no. Okay? Correct. Right. Correct. So the selflessness of Eliezer, because he is a potential son, as it were, or an heir for Avraham, but nonetheless he's willing, and not just to stand on the side, but to do all that he can, because he wants what Avraham wants, is really stark when you compare it again with Hagar, where the relationship is very, very cloudy and very confused. Yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
So it's not her child, or her pride in having this child. It was for Sarah, not for herself.
Yes and no, because as it actually develops, you see, it's not described that way.
Wasn't that the intention, though?
Yeah.
That she was supposed to be like a servant.
Theoretically. I'll just say theoretically, because what it all comes down to is. The reason it gets complicated is the second that it says that she gives her to Avraham as a wife. That with that word, everything just now got complicated. After she disses her, right? Is there a better way of saying this? Disrespects. Okay. After she disrespects. That sounds even worse, though. After she disrespects Sarah, and she tries to show that Sarah is not the woman in charge, Sarah's response is a political response. Her political response, and say, okay, let's see who's in charge. And therefore, what happens? The Tomer Sarai Lavram. Sarai says to Avram, Chamasi lecha nochi natati shivchati, right? I gave you my shivcha. I gave you my servant. I've been diminished in her eyes. Va'akel be'inel, yishpot Hashem b'nei v'necha. God will judge between me and you. Now again, you could very easily look at this whole dialogue and say that Sarah is a fickle woman. She's not. There is always, when dealing with the avot, there is always a dual relationship that you have to keep your eyes on. One relationship is each one of these people as individuals, and the other is each one of these as part of a nation or as leaders of a nation. Which means it's very possible that Sarah's own personal pride she'd be willing to put on the side, on a personal level, which she does. To take someone else, another woman, and put her in your husband's bed, that's not a very simple thing to do. But what was the issue? The issue over here is not that Avram is on an eagle trip and needs a little mini Avraham walking around. Avram's the leader of a nation, and there needs to be a new leader to have continuity of this nation. So on the national level is where there is a need for there to be some type of continuity. What happens is that the mistake that Hagar makes is that she confuses the two relationships. She thinks that by virtue of the fact that she is going to be the mother of this child, now it has catapulted her to a position of leadership. And Sarah says to Avram, you may have contributed to this as well, and therefore I need to show exactly who I am and who you are and who she is. Or again, she clearly calls her Shivchati. Vayom Avram al Sarai, hinei Shivchateich. He backs off immediately and says, okay, here is your servant. Not, but this is my new bride. Do as you see as well. And she abuses her. Now, you could say over here that Sarah abuses her because she's jealous or upset, or it's not personal. This is Sarah needs to establish her position. To establish her position, she needs to treat this other woman as a servant. Treating this other woman as a servant who has airs about her and considers herself to be of significance is by definition what she's going to see as abuse. And it all comes down to the relationship. Yes.
I never understood it. Still don't. And go back to Yishpot Hashem b'nei v'necha. Why does she call Avraham responsible? Why should she upset with him? And, you know, there's nothing that proves to us or shows us in any way that Avraham and Yahweh are requiring higher respect than the word.
Right.
When he says to her right
So what does she have against Avram when it was her idea?
Unless the problem becomes the end of Pasuk Gimel, but Titeno Tala Avram Isha Lo Le Isha. That as far as Avram was concerned, he treated this woman with complete respect as if she were a wife. Avram's a gentleman. Avram's a... Right? And right? As why? Let's go back again. Why? Because Avram is the kindest man you've ever met. Avram is a decent man. And for Avram is not going to treat her as a slave. So she, knowing Avram, gives it to Avram as a wife. Like Le'isha, as a wife. Avram treats her as a wife. And now there's the problem. So now, Sarah, you're right. This is Sarah's fault. Do you want to put blame? It is on the exact same moment. It's Sarah's greatness and it's her fault. And then she turns around and says, okay, this is an untenable position. And she goes back and treats her like a slave. Who else decides that she's a slave? Vayimtza malach Hashem al-ein amayim ben mar, al-ein baderech shur, vayomer, hagar, shivchat sarai. So who else calls her a shivcha? What? Yeah, the angel comes down and says, you are a shivcha. So again, I'm pointing out over here. Vayomer gash shivchat sarai imizeh, v'ata v'anatochi v'tomer b'nei sarai gvirti anochi barachat. So now... Exactly. Now, if she knows who she is, vayomer l'malach shuvi el gvirtech v'hit ani tachat yadeha. Go back, and she's the one in charge. All again, what have we done so far? I've only pointed out two things at this point. Maybe even three if you want. One, there's a parallel relationship between Eliezer and Avraham and Hagar and Sarah. Eliezer is completely, completely self-effacing when it comes to his relationship with Avraham. Hagar, things get a little bit more confusing. Hagar does not necessarily see herself as being, again, all the time, as being somebody who's second. In fact, we have these, not just hints, it says it clearly, that she looks down on Sarah at some point. That is exactly the problem. We're skipping sources 4 and 5 and 6. But all of those do point out to the fact that Avraham's son and only son is really Yitzchak. And that ultimately this question of who is Ishmael, it ends up becoming someone who's rejected. And therefore, fine, I won't skip. He wanted Rivka. There are, within Chazal, there are those who attack Eliezer for certain things that he does. On the other hand, there is in Chazal as well expressions of the greatest amount of respect, actually more than we can even imagine, towards Eliezer. So what we have to do at the end of the day is to look at the text and see which way the text runs easier. As I said, in that chapter, there's a lot more to talk about. I'm going to leave it for now because I do want to see the larger relationship. Yes.
Was it not forbidden by Hashem to do that?
Yes. Now, in order to appreciate the difficulty of the relationship with Hagar, one of the things that Chazal actually point to, and again, this is in the second independent episode, and that is the rejection not just of Hagar, but the rejection of Hagar and later her son, Yishmael, as well. And what is it that he did? The Torah says that he laughed. Well, that he was laughing.
But Sarah wasn't
laughing. Sarah laughed earlier. Everybody laughs regarding Yitzchak. But it says that he laughed. Well, by the way, what the laughter is, the laughter is cynicism. The laughter is, excuse me? Is mockery, it's scorn. Right, let's look at source number 7. But Terah Sarah at Ben Hagar HaMitzrit, and Sarah sees the son of Hagar, the Egyptian. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Rabbi Akiva haya omer bo devar l'gnai. Rabbi Akiva would explain this in a negative way. V'ni omer bo devar l'shevach, and I say it in a positive way. Dorish Rabbi Akiva taught, but Terah Sarah, ein mitzachek el gilei arayot. What was the negativity about Yishmael? That he was guilty of sexual impropriety. Why? Because we find the word mitzachek used later on in the narrative dealing with Yosef. When the wife of Potiphar, right, our Mrs. Robinson Potiphar, when she tries to ensnare Yosef, she describes it, and he came to, I don't translate in English, it's not make mockery, to litzachekbi, to... Okay. Fool around. Milamed shahita imenu sarah, therefore saying the word is the same word over here, because there's a sexual implication of the word litzachek. Over here, litzachek, this man is being litzachek, Ishmael. Reotel Ishmael machvish genot vitzad neshe anashim umane otam. That he would capture and seduce single women, married women. He says that's what he saw. Now, I do want to point something out. He is described as being the son of Hagar HaMitzrit. Again, specifically, HaMitzrit. In the book of Bereshit, again, I'm asking you to look at it as a book. In the book of Bereshit, there are a number of people who don't behave properly. Right? You can line them up. Paro, right? A pretty woman comes to town, he has to have her. Avimelech, a pretty woman comes to town, he has to have her. City of Stone, some men come to town, they have to have them. No, I mean, it all comes back to the same behavior. And all of this behavior, if you check, all comes from the same line. It all comes from the line of Ham. It all comes from the line of one of the sons of Noah, from Ham. All the men who misbehave in Bereshit all come from the same line. It comes from the same place. So therefore, if we know that Egypt, there are people who, we know Egypt generally is a place which will be greatly immoral, and there's a lot of comparisons between Egypt and Sodom. Over here, when he's described as the son of Hagar HaMitzrit, the Egyptian, so that's part of the connotation which the Midrash is identifying and saying, oh, and look at the way that he's behaving, the same questionable morality which takes place in Egypt is also being practiced by Yishmael. Now, there's a second opinion which is offered here, which we need to figure out where that came from. Tani Rabbi Yishmael, and you always have to love this, I've collected at home, I don't know how many examples I have, of the person who's speaking is the same name as the character they're speaking about. I've collected hundreds of cases like this. Tani Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael, who now is talking about Yishmael, says, Omer ein aloshon hazeh shel tzchok ela avodat kochavim. That what was he guilty of? He was guilty of idolatry, and he brings a verse connected with the golden calf. Rabbi Elazar, Benosh Rabbi Yosef Glili Omer, Ein Aloshon Hazet Tzchok, Eloshon Shvichut Damin. What is its murder? By the way, you do have to appreciate the three major sins in Judaism, sexual sins, idolatry, and murder, are all being represented over here, and are all possibilities in terms of what he was guilty of. Now, who was he trying to kill? Who was Yishmael trying to kill? Hech, what are we talking about? Ma'da'at Amar, Yekumu Mina Narim Yizachu Lefanai, Rabbi Zaryam Mishum Rabbi Levi Amar, Omer Le Yishmael Li Yitzchak, Nelech V'Nirech Elkeinu B'Sadeh, let's go and see our place in the field, or if you want, let's go play in the field. V'Yo Yishmael Notel Keshet V'Chatzim, he took his bow and arrow, Umereh Klape Yitzchak, and he's shooting at Yitzchak, he's trying to knock the apple off of his head, right? V'Osa Atzmo Ke'ilu Mitzachek, and he makes believe as if we're just having fun. So this is very interesting because it's saying that potentially what Yishmael really wanted to do is to kill Yitzchak. I mean, that's really what he wants. He wants to kill Yitzchak, which means Yitzchak now, of course, is the competition. Yitzchak is the one who needs to be gotten rid of. Now, here's where I tell you some of the things that are interesting. I did promise you, so I have to do it sooner or later, right? Where does this murderous desires come from? So take a look, and we could have done this in lots of ways. I want to do this as easily and as succinct as possible. So we're going to use what's called the Targum Yonatan, which is actually the Targum Pseudo Yonatan. Don't bother me. In source number 8, the verse reads, V'tomer Sarai el Avram. Sarai says to Avram, Chamasi alecha, here's the verse that he gets all upset, Anochi natati shivchati yechekecha. We saw this verse already. I gave you, source number 8, source 4, I gave you my servant, V'teira ki haratan, she got pregnant, ve'ekel ve'eneha, and Sarah now is looked upon lightly. In the Targum Yonatan, it's not the same as Onkelos. Onkelos is almost word for word. Yonatan gives us a little bit of background. She goes, I'm mad at you. I left my father's house. I left my hometown. I followed you off. No, this is almost lech tech achrei be'eretz lo zerua. I followed you walking through over here. Vatim chala eretz nachriya. I followed you to a strange land. Vata bavor shelo ayiti. You led it, and because I couldn't give birth, so you also hear the feelings of guilt of infertility, which is again such a painful statement. The midrash is, or that he's quoting, is identifying. Shacharti shivchati. I released my slave, which is also interesting. It says shacharti. I released her as a slave. V'netatiya b'chekecha, and I put her in your bosom, as it were. V'tiraki herta v'yitbazek vodi. And when she got pregnant, my honor was v'yitbazek. It's better than just diminished. It's
despised.
B'faneha, in front of her. V'ata yitgale lefnei Hashem elboni. And now God will recognize the way that I've been hurt. V'yifros shalom b'niyu v'necha. God is going to have to make peace between us. That's the God in over here. God is going to have to make shalom bayit. Right? We're messed up now. We have to go to God for shalom bayit. God is going to have to help us. V'titmaleya aretz m'meni. And I'm going to have to have children now because now I've been hurt. And now God is going to have to make it up to me. Again, this whole translation is fascinating. L'nz terech l'baneha. We're not going to need her children. Shel hagar bat paro ben nimrod. And it just now gave us an identity, which is, you say, what? What are they talking about? So it describes her as Hagar, the daughter of Pharaoh, which, by the way, is enough. That is a lot of you knew, but not just the daughter of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh over here is the grandson of Nimrod, the one who threw you into the furnace. Now, there are a lot of things to say about this. Hagar, the daughter of Paro, who's the son of Nimrod. Now, there's a lot of things to say about this. First of all, the murderous personality of Yishmael, who's trying to kill Yitzchak, is now being paralleled with Nimrod, who tried to kill Avraham. Okay? That's one thing that you should get out of this. There's a second thing that you should get out of this. Somebody asked, hold it, if she's the daughter of Paro, then how did she become a slave? The Midrash explains that. Midrash says that when Avraham came there, then Pharaoh has an epiphany, and he says to her, it's better for you to be in Avraham's house, even second in Avraham's house, than to be a queen in my house. Which, by the way, who's the one who knows that more than anyone else? Eliezer. That's exactly what Eliezer's thought is. So the Midrash identifies that. There's another level over here that I also want to point out to you. We know that there's a concept which is called Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim. Things that happen to the ancestors happen again, which is Jewish history creates Jewish destiny. Things that happened in the past will happen again. Things that Avraham did create a spiritual reality of things happening again. By the way, that is why I called my books, this whole new series is called Echoes of Eden, trying to show this idea that things do repeat themselves and come again and again. That's the major approach. When Avraham and Sarah go down to Egypt because there's a famine, that creates the same dynamic that when the whole Jews will go down because there will be a famine. When Avram feels threatened and Sarah is taken, that is the same dynamic that when the sons want to be killed and they want to keep the girls alive later on in the time of Pharaoh. When Sarah is taken to Pharaoh's house, we're told in the Chumash, this is black and white, is struck with plagues, and Avraham then leaves with great wealth. All of that is foreshadowing that when the Jews will go down to Egypt, they're going to threaten the men and want to take the women, and then they'll be saved, and they'll be struck with plagues, and they're going to leave with great wealth. So I'm saying, You read what happened over there in Egypt, that created the dynamic for that to happen again. Now, have any of you ever heard this idea that the daughter of Paro was a good person? Yes. Yes. What gives you this indication? She saves Moshe, who she knows is a Hebrew. She saves him and she raises him and she protects him and she actually sets him up with a great job. Okay. Right, and she keeps it secret. Does the daughter of Paro, what was her name?
Batya.
Does she leave Egypt with the Jews when they leave, or does she stay behind and get killed? And that's my first question. Secondly, if she does leave, is that based upon a midrash or is it based upon a verse? Okay, I'll help you. In Divrei Hayamim, which you don't have in front of you, it's source 23, you only have 22. These are the teacher's notes. I only decided to add it last night after I already sent off the sources. In source 23, which is really Divrei Hayamim Aleph, book 1 of Chronicles, chapter 4, it says, Ve'eila b'nei bitya bat paro ashelakach mared. It says, Paro's daughter, Bithya, left with the Jews. She married one of the Jews afterwards, and she had children with one of the Jews, and everyone lives happily ever after. That's a verse. That's a pasuk. So now you realize that the idea that the daughter of Paro is going to leave, which I'm telling you, is black and white in the text. The only problem is it's not black and white in the book of Exodus. This is why you don't know it, but it's black and white in the book of Chronicles, and Divrei Hayamim it's there. So the fact that the daughter of Paro will end up leaving with the Jews and they leave, that also has its source with Hagar, the daughter of Paro, leaving with Avraham when he leaves. So there you have parallel with that as well. It was worth coming to class just for that. But I'll what? The chapter is Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yudchet. And by the way, her name is not Batya, her name is Bithya. Okay. I'm sorry. I still have more things up my sleeve. I don't know why. She thinks she's heard everything. Okay. Remember I mentioned to you that there is a parallel. Well, the first thing is, remember, we talked about Eliezer. Source number 10 is one of the many places that you can find this teaching, that it says that there are a number of people who went straight to Gan Eden. Straight. Sheva nichnasu b'chayim le Gan Eden. Seven people went alive straight to the Gan Eden. Ve'elohim, these are they. Serach bat Asher, Ubitya bat Paro, okay, which is very interesting. Chiram melech Tzur, Eved melech Hakushi, Eliezer, Eved Avraham. Okay, there's more. These are people who are considered to be so special, so holy. And by the way, aren't you happy now that Bithya is on this list as well? These are people that really just could have had everything and put it all aside, and they knew exactly what it really means to serve God. Slow down, slow down. Shwaya, shwaya. If you look now, look at 13 then. That's good enough. What I want you to see from this is it says in source 13, "Vayomer lov ani Hashem, I am God, asher hotzaticha me'Ur Kasdim. I took you out of Ur Kasdim." Now, we normally think of Ur Kasdim as the name of a place. The Targum here says, and I said this is also found in Midrashim, "Vayomer lov ani Hashem, shotziticha mikivshon ha'esh. I'm the one who took you out of the burning furnace," which means Ur Kasdim, Ur means a furnace, the furnace in Kasdim. I'm the one who took you out of the fiery furnace of Kasdim. We find this in source 15 as well. V'yomet haran apnei terech aviv ve'eretz moladato b'ur Kasdim. Right? He Haran, who's Avram's brother, he died while his father was still alive, right, in the land that he was born, b'ur Kasdim. Over here, again, the Targum Yonatan, who's quite consistent, also translates this as the Kifshan Ha'esh, also as the furnace. In source number 17, and so on and so forth, these are the five kings. The Targum Yonatan here says, who is Amraphel? Who Nimrod? He was Nimrod, Asher Sha'amar, who said, Lahashlich Avram La'esh. He's the one who threw Avram into the burning bush. That was Nimrod. So now we have the furnace, sorry. Nimrod is the one who tries to kill Avraham. Nimrod's granddaughter is the daughter of Paro. Her son tries to kill Yitzchak. And now, in Source 18, when Avram goes to war against the five kings, and he's victorious, now why was he victorious? So, it says that he took 318 men with him, right? And some of you know that that person is Eliezer, so let's look at Source 18. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv. Avram hears that his brother, really nephew, has been captured. Vayereket chanichav yilidei beito. He takes his followers, those raised in his house. Shmona asar ushlosh meot. He takes 318 men. Vayirdof ad Dan, and he chases them off towards a place called Dan. The Targum says, "V'kasher shema Avram ki nishba achiv, chimeshet bechorav." He arms them. Shechinech lemilchama, who he had trained for war. Migdulei beito, those raised in his house. V'loratu lechadimo, but yivchar mehem. They didn't want to come, so he chooses only one, Eliezer ben Nimrod. Oh, he takes Eliezer ben Nimrod. Shehadome bigvurato kikulam. He was as strong as all of them. How is Nimrod described in the Torah? He's a mighty hunter in front of God. Well, guess what? He had a really strong son. Shlosh me'od v'shana sorav yidof adan. Which means according to... By the way, the story got a lot more interesting. Nimrod tries to kill Avraham, and Avraham leaves the furnace unscathed, and Avraham walks off with his son as a follower. Right? That's a much better story. He walks off with Eliezer, which means if you realize now that Eliezer is raised in Nimrod's house, and he's raised again with murder, Avodah Zarah, and everything else that you want, and he leaves, and he becomes Avraham's follower, now you can understand how they can say, and he went straight up into heaven, and his way that he describes himself, I'm an Eved Avraham. So now you have this beautiful parallel going on, really a parallel, going on between Eliezer and Hagar. They're both coming from this really alien place. They're both raised in the same way in this alien place. And they both come and they both have an unbelievable opportunity. And now you realize that in a certain sense, Hagar is the prototype for Bithya, but she ends up letting it go to her head. Bithya doesn't. Bithya is somebody who's still able to say, no, I'd rather be a low-level Jew than be somebody who could be the queen of Egypt. But I'm saying the Midrash over here, again, which everything that we're told over here is all based on the Midrash, just the parallel which is set up in my mind is fascinating. I do want to end with one last... I do want to end with one last scene in the Gemara, which... maybe this is a little... We already had a little risque things. Maybe this is a little risque. Which, if nothing else, shows Eliezer in a relationship that we don't know anything about. How does Eliezer think about Sarah? Which means, okay, he's Avraham. What does he think about Sarah? So it's actually... It describes something which is going on in the Marat HaMachpelah. Rav Bana, Source 21. Rav Bana'a, he would make marks by caves in order to identify where people were buried. So Kohanim would know that they shouldn't go there. He would map out graves. When he arrived at the cave of Avraham, he bumps into Eliezer's servant who's standing by the entrance, not letting people enter. His job there is to protect and not to let anybody come in. He's, again, protecting Avram's house. He goes straight into Gan Eden. He never died, according to what we saw. Omer Leh, my Ka'avid Avraham. So he says, what's Avraham doing? Omer Leh, he says, Ga'ani b'kanfa d'sara v'kama'ani l'beresha. It says he's sleeping in the arms of Sarah, and she's looking fondly at him, at his head. And that's what Eliezer is protecting. She's Eliezer is protecting Avram and Sarah lying together in an intimate relationship. His job is to protect the two of them. And that's the job that he ends up with for eternity in Gan Eden, protecting Avraham and Sarah. So whereby Hagar was unable to know exactly who she was or who she should be, Eliezer, this Eved of Avram, and again, the proudest thing he can say is that I am an Eved of Avram, and as Avraham goes up into the highest places of heaven, Eliezer is right there with him, because Eliezer, when it comes down to it, is the Eved of Avram.